want to know how to find it. Seek it out when they hide it. You know it's in the bag when it's an easy grab. But come on, take a chance now. So go, 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 geocache, geocache. And if you need help, we're right there in a flash. If you got a question, just call in and ask. Uncover the stash on the Geocaching Podcast. The Geocaching Podcast.
Welcome to the Geocaching Podcast, episode 453, recorded live on May 25th, 2016. I'm your host, Head Hard Hat with...
Daniel W4.
And that's it tonight. You can join our chat room and watch our live video stream, plus participate with us as we record this episode. All this and more can be found at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. Be sure to contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. And also find us on Twitter at geocachingpodcast.com/Twitter and Facebook at geocachingpodcast.com/Facebook. Yes, it's one of those things that when you start off using new equipment, that's what ends up happening. I literally am running right now off the new iMac computer. And when you have new equipment, of course, you have new challenges when it comes to actually getting things going. So if some things are louder than others until we can figure all this out, that's where that's at. So I have with me Daryl W. Four, who has been our guest host and replace for Scott Burks. And boy, I am glad you are here because nobody else is around. Scott,
you could have done the show all by yourself.
Oh, this, yeah, but that's droning. I mean, come on, it gets boring.
Literally would have been the Head Hard Hat Hour.
You know, the people get enough of my voice as it is, so it's always good to have others.
You could have just read the news for the day,
man, and we've got a lot of it too. All right, so let's jump on and get a couple of the commercial things out of the way, and then we will jump right into the updates. If you haven't heard, if you've been living under a rock or you just haven't listened to our podcast yet, we got some good news for you, or interesting news at least. This episode is sponsored by our good patrons of the Geocaching Podcast. To become a contributing patron, simply click on the Patreon logo on our webpage to help keep our podcast going. From all of us at the Geocaching Podcast, we thank you. Yeah. So like I said, lots of new information, lots of good stuff. The new computer, we're testing it out live. Why wouldn't we? Just jump in with both feet, don't look, and pray. So that's where we're at. Things are working good, though. The couple of things, apparently the iPad is a little bit in. So I'm going to turn down the volume on the actual iPad because it's almost off on the board. So I think that might give a little bit more range to work with. Other than that, didn't get a chance to do much geocaching at all. It was all – I spent all weekend. And, Daryl, I don't know if you're like me when it comes to technology stuff. That's just a – open-ended question anyways. When you get in a situation where you've got new equipment and you got to get it to work and things are not going as planned because you need new equipment to go with the old equipment, you need to get all the connections right. I don't think I slept more than maybe 5 or 6 hours between Saturday and Sunday because I just had to get this thing to work one way or the other.
So usually when I have those kind of issues, it's like, all right, I got to go sleep and I'll come back at this fresh. And then like, you know, 1 or 2 in the morning, I get up and I'm working on it again.
Yes.
And then I'll go back to sleep for an hour and, you know.
That's me. Matter of fact, it was funny. My wife, Amy, was saying to the animals, now, be sure to take Dad some grapes and some water. Make sure he gets some kind of food and sustenance to keep him going because otherwise I don't even think about stuff like that. So, yeah, it took until I think I finally got everything going about 1 o'clock in the morning Monday. So that was it. And then I had to get up in a couple hours to go to work. And mm-hmm. It's like, oh, man. But that's all part of the fun.
Yeah. See, and my experimenting was just with that GoPro and Periscope.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
And, you know, it's not like it's anything interesting, really, but spoiler.
Yeah.
The phone does a much better job than the GoPro does.
Really?
Yeah. You know, the GoPro is a more versatile device because you can throw it under the water, you know, that kind of stuff. You know, stick it over your head and you can still have the phone there, which is the whole thing that I wanted.
Right.
But the quality just is not there in the video. The phone is doing a much better job.
Yeah.
You know, and some of that, too, is you know, your lighting conditions, because it's a wide-angle lens. It's a fisheye lens. So when you've got a bright, sunny sky, it tends to glare a lot more and wash out your colors.
Ah.
So, you know, I've got to play with it a lot more to get some of that kind of stuff done, you know, figured out. But I did a whole bunch of the periscopes from the zoo on Saturday. So many that Scott had to call me and tell me to stop periscoping.
You have had quite the amount of attention at the zoo lately.
Yeah, well, you know, we got a membership. They opened up the new Pinguarium.
Yep.
The nieces and nephews want to go like almost every weekend. So, yeah, I'm there. I might as well take some pictures and, you know, play
Periscope.
With, Periscope. And, you know, we were doing periscopes from the train a couple of times, you know, playing with the waterproof casing on the GoPro. And, oh, that sucks. Right now. This is going to get a lot better when Periscope actually allows you to pick which microphone you're using.
Yes.
Because right now they don't. It's coming. It's not here yet. So when you put that GoPro in the waterproof casing,
yeah, no doubt. So
I did get a couple of caches. We went down to the Detroit River Walk, hit a couple of caches with the dog and the nephew, and had a lot of fun.
That's great. Of course, I had going back to the GoPro. When are you getting your drone?
You know, I really kind of want the Phantom 4, but there's no chance of that happening anytime in the near future. And for those who don't know, the Phantom 4 is the one that does subject tracking.
Yes.
So it's got the 5 or the 4K camera on board, along with like 3 or 4 other cameras for obstacle avoidance and that kind of thing. But the concept is you pretty much frame up your shot. It then does, as I understand it, optical tracking on the subject. So it tries to get like your face and the direction you're facing in frame all the time is the way I understand
it. Wow, how the heck is it going to do that if you're riding a motorcycle?
Well, it's looking for the helmet in that case.
Yeah, yeah.
But it's looking to frame that shot, you know, consistently. And at the same time, doing the obstacle avoidance. It's like, this is really cool.
Yeah.
You know, there's been a number of drones that have promised that kind of stuff, but only the DJIs are compatible with Periscope. And Facebook just announced Monday or Tuesday, probably Tuesday, that they're also supporting the DJI drones with Facebook Live.
Wow. This is going to be fun. I was just born way too early. I'm just saying. There's just too many toys and things coming out now.
See, this is what you got to do in your retirement.
I know it. Oh, I'm going to. Don't think that for a second I'm not. I like me toys. All right, let's move on because we can spend the whole show talking about that. Let's see. Talking about the podcast roundup, letting our viewers know what's going on in the geocaching podcasting community. What's coming up this week on GeoGearheads? I'll even let that go to you there, Daryl.
All right, 230 is our episode number, and it's going to be trip planning. Believe it or not, this is going to be our first actual trip planning episode.
Really?
Yeah, we've done a bunch of them on travels and, you know, travel planning and talking with individuals about how they do it. This time, we're talking about how to do the trip planning with Scotty, or, you know, Shorty Knits. And according to Scott, she will be there.
All right.
And Sydney Sawyer, also known as Shermanator 18. So, unfortunately, it's been so crazy around here. I haven't had a chance to talk with either one of them and confirm, but they're both supposed to be there tomorrow. And if not, it's my own fault.
That's always fun. And both of them are exceptional. If you had a chance to listen to the host quiz, Shorninitz just took out Taz and Scott like they were not even there. She held back in the beginning and just kind of played it cool. And then when the questions started getting harder, she was just nailing it right and left. Blew them out of the water. Very, very smart lady. So, yeah, this should be a fun show.
Yeah, and I'm sure that she's going to have, you know, she's such the planner. And when we had Scott and Jesse on talking about their road trips, they gave us a lot of insight. But talking with her and Sherman Major 18, this is going to be a great show for anyone planning any type of traveling this season.
Yeah, they know their stuff. That is awesome. All right. Also tomorrow on the GeoSnippets Reboot podcast, since we've been at this for a good 3-4 months trying to get the computer set up to and the fine folks that contributed so that we could get the new computer, we're just going to do our segment tomorrow on a studio tour, which means I got to vacuum and stuff in here and clean a couple things before then, so you guys can see all the behind the scenes stuff and you can see where the computer is set up and all the other ones and who talks to what and all that. So we're literally going to give a studio tour of this massive complex, which, like wife Amy likes saying, the bedroom. Anyway, so that's how that's going to go, and that'll be tomorrow on the GeoSnippets Reboot podcast. Finally, please, please, please consider becoming a patron of the Geocaching podcast. We greatly appreciate it. It does cost funds to keep all this fun stuff going, and you know, everything from hosting to podcast stuff. So if you would not mind going to geocachingpodcast.com and clicking on the Patreon or the PayPal and just throw a couple bucks at us each month, we would greatly appreciate it. And for all the people that are doing that, thank you. And for all the people that are considering it, what's taking you so long? Jump on the bandwagon. We'd appreciate it. And we'll go on from there. So thank you so much. We actually were going to have, before Taz wimped out on us, just kidding, Taz. He had an engagement he had to get into. Taz was going to read in the news today, but I think this is going to be a good segue just to jump right into what's happened, because originally I got an email from Chris Ronan, also known as Rock Chalk, and he works there at Geocaching HQ in the amongst many of the hats. One of them is the public relations stuff as well, and just kind of told us, hey, guess what, this is going on today. It's going to be going out with some information about the geocaching challenge caches update. And Daryl, I'll tell you what, why don't we just start right into some of this with the announcement that they actually have right now out of the blog. And we'll have in the show notes the links to all this fun stuff that we're going to talk about tonight as well.
Yeah, so they in the blog they announced today, and everyone will be getting this on the 31st in their member emails. But the moratorium has been lifted with Woo-hoo! Some new changes.
Yes.
So you are now allowed to place challenge caches again.
With
that's the headline.
Yes. There's more.
But yeah, there's a lot more. So what's basically happening, as everyone's probably heard by now, you have to have a challenge checker for your cache. It has to be web-based right now. Project GC is the only one that is doing it. That's not to say that it's going to just be Project GC. I'm sure now that they've lifted the a moratorium and gotten some specs out there, you'll see more people creating their own challenge checkers. So that's going to be good news once that starts happening. They've changed the guidelines, which we're going to talk about a little later on. Mm-hmm. But one of the big new changes is that the cache owner must have qualified for the cache.
Now, this is good, because when I read this at first, it's like, how are they going to even prove this?
Well, but that's kind of what you have to do, because the challenge checker is your proof.
Okay.
So you have to qualify using the challenge checker for your own cache.
Yes. Yeah, so you actually have to
qualify. Yes. You're fine.
So you actually, whatever challenge, basically, as far as I understand this, whatever kind of a challenge that you're going to do, you have to be able to do this. Yes.
Right. So if you publish a fizzy challenge, you must have qualified for the fizzy challenge. So that's basically what it's saying. And what they're doing is, as Scott and Walt used to say, it was the BEM Rex, because there was a cacher in their area who placed a whole bunch of caches, of challenge caches, with requirements that they couldn't fill themselves.
Right.
Now, I have the DeLorme challenge for Michigan. There's no chance that I'm getting the DeLorme challenge anytime soon.
Right.
But a good note that we should throw in right now, all of the caches, all the challenge caches that are currently active are grandfathered in. They do not have Ooh. To comply with these new rules.
That's interesting. And the only reason why I say that, because I understand some of the guidelines and how are they going to interplay that. So, yeah, this is there's a bunch of stuff, and we're going to go over all the stuff in a little bit of exactly what the guidelines are. I thought it was kind of interesting just to spend a little bit of time on – they actually give some reasoning behind why they did this. And some of the things that they talked about in here, like, for example, subjectivity often results in difficult review processes. So they wanted to come up with a way of making it less hectic for the reviewers to do stuff. And again, depending on how these challenges go, how do they differentiate this?
Well, one of the things was with the challenges previously, you had very ambiguous guidelines that people like to game and do stuff that may be okay in one community, but the reviewer's impression of those guidelines was different in another, and you know, wouldn't always pass, which then led to a ton of appeals to geocaching HQ.
Right.
So they were saying in their blog post that more than 50% of the appeals were related to challenge caches before the moratorium.
Right. And the other thing that they said that I thought was awesome, very interesting, since each reviewer examines hundreds of thousands of cache submissions each year, they owe it to making the process as enjoyable as possible. But they also said there was only a small percent that actually even qualified as a challenge cache. So they had to go through all that.
Right. Yeah, and well, this is one of the reasons why they took away virtuals is because of the troubles in reviewing them.
Yeah.
So this is their attempt to make the system actually work and continue to allow challenge caches. Yeah. So that's something that's, I think, important to remember. They're not saying that this is the final version. This is the final attempt right now.
Right.
And we may see changes.
Yeah, I found the spot in the blog. It says, despite the fact that less than 1% of cache submissions were challenge caches.
It's like, right.
Whew. All right.
Yeah, challenge caches are not that popular overall, but they're something that a lot of the serious cachers really like to work for.
Sure. And the DeLorme challenge was one of the first ones I think I ever really heard about way back when.
Yeah, the DeLorme and the Fizzy were the first two that I really saw popping up. And the reason we placed the DeLorme challenge here in Michigan was that no one else had done it. And a lot of people were talking about, we really want to do something like, you know, that was actually when the county challenges and stuff had started to pop up. And we had the county challenges.
Right.
But we didn't have the DeLorme challenge. And one of the guys, a podcaster out of Colorado, dared me essentially to place that DeLorme challenge. So I did.
Wow. That's cool. Now, this is, and I don't want this to go too sidetrack with this. I think the county challenges are probably going to have to be the replacement that, since Garmin has purchased DeLorme, at least in the mapping aspects of it. If they're no longer going to be making the DeLorme books anymore with the segments and all of that, do we just carry on the torch, or do we just move on to county challenges for the state?
Well, I don't think that we're going to be able to list those, period, under the new guidelines. So we'll get into that in a little while.
Sure.
But again, all of the current ones are going to be grandfathered, so you're going to be working from whatever the checkers allow you to do.
Right.
So like my DeLorme, actually you don't even necessarily need a checker if it's grandfathered, but mine has the checker thanks to one of the local cachers having done that for me long time ago. And it's the only reason that I didn't archive that one, because the GSAC checker stopped working for me years ago.
Yeah.
And there's no way I'm going through and trying to figure out where all those caches are.
Right.
But in any case, yeah, those are going to continue to operate as they were, but they're going to be in that grandfathered state. So it's wherever they are now, they're probably going to be frozen in time. And since DeLorme isn't going to be issuing new atlases, that's not a bad thing.
No, you'll just have the same format to go after it.
Yeah, but they're going to sit there as they are now until something happens and you get archived. So if there's any of those old DeLorme challenges, you probably want to go out and work your butt off this summer to get them done.
Yeah.
Just in case, because once they're archived, they're gone.
Yeah, that's a fact. All right, so this that gives you a little premise as to some of their thinking with this. I won't play the devil's advocate and start getting into that took a year for them to figure this out type stuff. So we'll go from that, because I'm sure we're going to get some feedback. We'd love to get Chris on and just kind of say, hey, what during the entire year, what happened? If he can even get into that.
Yeah, give us a little insight.
Information as to what the process and the thought behind this. If this was just it with what they're putting out on the blog, was there other things that were factors that would be interesting, that kind of stuff?
Yeah, before we actually get into what the new requirements are, I do want to mention one thing that they really kind of pushed at the end of this blog post. Right now, there is no challenge cache icon or attribute.
Yes.
That's not necessarily permanent. This is, there's a lot of effort that's going to have to go into it. As they said, it didn't make sense to engineer a new icon or attribute only to lose it if challenge caches don't work out.
Yeah, let's hit that for half a sec, too.
Yeah, this is the stopgap that they're, you know, they've settled on this. This is what they think might make a workable framework. They're going to give it about a year. According to the blog post, it's not set in stone. If they said, you know, at the end of the summer, well, this just isn't working out, they could take challenge caches away. They being, you know, Geocaching HQ.
Right.
We don't know right now. They don't know right now. This is what's happening. They'll reevaluate the situation in probably about a year, and they'll come back. My guess is this solution is really just to get things rolling, let the community weigh in again, and we're going to see in about a year or so another announcement that there's more changes coming, which will include either an icon or an attribute.
Right.
That's my guess.
Well, it's going
to
be.
I don't have anything to really base it on aside from.
Right. We're just giving our opinions on stuff here. We don't have all the facts, but that is what they put in the end of the blog. And, you know, it's interesting with this. It's going to be interesting to see how people are going to react to this overall. If it is such a niche kind of cache to go after in the first place, and then you take I don't want to say the ease of doing it, but making it kind of like, if you're going to do a challenge cache, you better make it something worth doing, and is not like the virtuals where you have the McDonald's booth where you met your girlfriend kind of thing. It's actual, more like, I'm hoping more like an Earth cache philosophy of, you're going to have to take some time and effort and do it right and make it a challenge that's worthy of a challenge cache icon down the road, hopefully. And that's going to keep, I think, a lot of the people that just want to throw them together out of the mix.
Well, and they've changed the source of the materials, what can qualify, you know, and some of this apparently, I seem to recall them making some changes a couple of months before they actually dropped the moratorium bomb.
Right.
So we don't really have enough information to say that they had changed it then or not. It's just my recollection. But they had made some changes to what you were allowed to have in a challenge cache, you know, shortly before the moratorium, I think.
Right.
But they've changed that even more to where it's now very limiting on what you can actually place as a challenge cache. But getting back to the icon thing, for a while now, they've actually said that you have to have the challenge caches listed as a mystery. Yep. And in English, you have to have the word challenge in the title.
Yes.
So that's their solution to not having the challenge icon. And I don't think that that's necessarily a good solution, especially because you can't filter out challenges based on
that word,
that keyword.
Correct.
Now, if they update their search, okay, maybe that's getting a little bit better. But, you know, right now, actually, you know, I haven't played with a new search in about a 2 or 3 months.
It's they've improved it a bit.
Yeah, no, they had the update with the worldwide search, and I think that's the last time I played with it, but I didn't get into all of the functions, so they may even have that negative search now.
Yeah.
They not.
I don't remember seeing it. The interesting thing is sometimes people will make an event cache or some other cache have the word challenge in there. So somewhat you're still going to get overlap, I think.
Well, and that's the other problem. You end up if you're searching for challenge caches, you're going to have false positives.
Yeah.
So that's something that really isn't a good solution. That's why I think they're going to have either the attribute, because you can do the not attribute. Or if it's its own cache type, which I think is probably the better solution, personally.
Yes.
That way, it's a whole nother icon that you can turn on or off. You can add it or not, and it's just it's better, in my opinion, than having just an attribute. Because then, the puzzle caches, the unknown caches, have just become the dropping spot for anything.
Anything.
And it is too cluttered, which is, why it's kind of fine that they're in there. But I'd really like to see the challenge, because they're so specific, be its own cache icon, and then you have that separate count saying, here's all of the accomplishments that I've made. These are your badges of honor.
Right. Yeah, exactly. Exactly that.
Let's move on to the requirements, since we are...
Oh, lots of stuff with that.
But the number two requirement now is the challenge checker. And that says simply that you have to have that web-based challenge checker. And there's another dedicated article. So if you want to get into that, you can go into the support article and get into it. But right now, Project-GC is the only challenge checker. And if I remember correctly, because I think... they might have changed some of the requirements over at Project GC for this. But as it had been, you had to apply to create the challenge checkers, which wasn't a big deal. There's no charge for any of that stuff. And if you have a challenge that's like yours, all you have to do is contact them and basically have them copy it over and... change the relevant information, your GC code and that kind of stuff, center points, if that's what you're dealing with. So it's all stuff that you can easily do. It's not as cumbersome as people seem to think it will be.
Well, if they hear the word code,
right.
And they get scared.
Yeah. It's Lua code, as I understand it,
right.
Which is, easy, but kind of not easy,
It's, yeah, you're going to get like people dangerous. Going like they are with Where I Go, going, I can't do this.
Right, right. And well, and it is the code behind Where I Go is Lua.
Yeah.
But they've had the builders, which have caused lots and lots of trouble.
Yeah, and that's another whole show in and of itself.
Sure. And then the next point that they made was on the final container location, whereas, like with my DeLorme, you have to contact me for the final. That's not acceptable anymore. The container must be at the coordinates either for the listing or posted as visible additional waypoints.
What do they mean by that?
Well, you can have the parking coordinates.
Ah.
Or you can have the final. So you could still have the cache in the middle of a park or something. You could have it in the middle of the parking lot and then say the final is over here.
Gotcha.
So it still doesn't show up in the right spot. You actually have to go in and do that. And again, this is something that I'd like to see changed, where it doesn't show the final cords until you satisfy the requirements. But later on, they also talk about you can actually find the cache and sign it at any time, but you can't log it online until you've completed the challenge.
Right.
So they're actually making that a lot, that exception, I guess we'll call it.
Yeah.
To make people happy.
Now, how does this work where you can actually find the cache, you can find the final, get everything taken care of? Wasn't, and I have not found challenge caches as a whole in any extreme, but I've seen a lot of other ones, like the DeLorme challenges. There are times where at least in the back in the old days, where they would do things like they would put your name on a plaque. I mean, those type of things. Is now that you can just you can actually find the final, is that stuff going to just end up going away anyways, or has it?
I think it pretty much has gone away, because for the most part, the challenge caches are just way too commonplace at this point.
Yeah, before that was a special thing. I mean, that was right. that one is an accomplishment.
Exactly. So now it's not as special as it was. You'd have more people finding it than you did, 5-10 years ago. You know, there I'm sure are some people doing the plaques, and I think more common is where you have the events where they give like the gold ammo can for your 400th or 4,000th find or whatever that is in the area.
Yeah.
So there's a lot of that kind of stuff that still happens.
Huh.
Now, we were talking a little earlier about the source of the material, and now what they're saying is it must come from information broadly available on geocaching.com, such as the stats page, cache placement dates, types, attributes, souvenirs, and stuff like that, and it has to be verified information on geocaching.com.
Where would it not be?
Well, if it's something like first to finds, those aren't.
True.
If it's something like DeLorme pages, that's not on geocaching.com. So right. The way that I'm reading all of this information, it's basically saying you can't do those challenges anymore. I think you might be able to make the argument that counties or something of that nature, you can do state challenges like that.
Right.
Because states, obviously, you can get off the stats page, but even the counties, there are maps that supply that information on geocaching.com. So I think those might be allowed, but I think the DeLorme challenges aren't going to be allowed anymore, even if they were still making the books.
Right. Wow.
And the cache owner now also has to demonstrate that there are plenty of qualifying caches to meet the challenge at the time of publication. So if you're saying, you have to find 50 of this style cache, don't expect it to be listed if there's like 51
right.
caches. To me, that's not qualifying for that plenty. But again, this is one of those problems, is they haven't given a whole lot of guidance that you can really count on.
There's a lot of gray area.
Exactly. And that's where the reviewers are still going to have to get involved. And I worry in some cases that this might cause more of those appeals.
Yeah, no doubt. Okay, verification.
Yeah. There's also a fifth category in there on the standard for criteria. And one of the things is no more things like DNF logs, because now it must be a positive goal, not a negative, like the DNFs they consider negative. So it has to be a find, not a DNF.
Wow.
And how many of those caches have we seen where it's you have to have so many DNF logs?
Yeah, no doubt.
They're not going to be allowed anymore, because you have to have a positive find. and it has to be a simple and easy to explain list of requirements now.
Wow.
No long list of rules, no restrictions. Any of that kind of stuff will cause it to not be published.
Yeah, because they even made the comment in the blog about that, where they'd had some challenge caches submitted that literally had pages and pages and pages of requirements.
Right. And that's one of the big complaints that caused this problem in the first place, was all of these caches that required way too much to actually get it. And seriously, if you're publishing a cache like that where it's only one smiley, do you really expect people to find it?
It's hard enough to get Americans to do multi-caches, let alone...
It's like taking the multi-cache to the extreme.
Yeah, no doubt.
Another thing, we mentioned earlier that the owner must have met the challenge. Well, now they're saying you may be required to provide the reviewer with a list of caches from your area who would qualify. So if the reviewer says, this is not a reasonable challenge, he may say, okay, or she, show me a list of cachers around you that have completed the requirements for this challenge.
Wow. Proof. That's not a bad thing.
Well, no, but it also means you can't do those aspirational caches anymore where it's really, really tough to fill the requirements.
Right.
Which is exactly what they're trying to do. They're trying to make sure that everything is accessible to everyone.
Yeah, keep it simple.
Yeah. Now, under verification, challenge owners need to make sure that the cachers can show that they have met the cache requirements without compromising their privacy.
Okay.
Which means, you know, don't show like home addresses and things like that, you know, home locations.
Right.
I'm sure there's more things like probably photos. You can't do anything based on photos, though I'm not sure that that's technically information that you can collect from the API and do checks on, so it probably wouldn't be allowed anyway.
Right.
And the owner must show that they've met the requirements, as we already mentioned. Then this, I already talked on the number 7. The cachers may sign the challenge cache physical log at any time. However, the challenge cache may be logged as found online only after the log is signed and the challenge tasks have been met and documented.
Yeah. Wow, that's good stuff.
Yeah, and then they get into the nice big list of what's acceptable.
I thought some of these were kind of interesting. Maybe if we just hit some of the ones for...
Yeah, I was going to say, we're going a little long.
Yeah,
this could really be a whole show just going over the
requirements. But the ones that are new now, I think we can hit that. Most of these are all falling under the not acceptable category, which I found interesting.
Well, one of them that's actually not listed as new this time, but I think is really relevant, is the attainability, because it used to be you had to, in some cases, specify, I am starting this challenge today. And then from that day forward is what counts. Now they're saying you can't do that anymore. It has to be caches that you found of all time, not time limited, or not limited to a specific time. But they're also limiting the time limited caches. So like you can't do the busy day anymore where you do 50 finds in a day or the 10 icons in a day. That can't be done. They are letting you do streaks, but only up to 365 days, which I found interesting that they didn't go to 366 to make the leap.
Good catch. I like that.
So, you know, the only thing you can do is streak based as far as time. You can't say, you know, find 50 caches in a day or a month or anything like that. It has to be just streak-based, and you can't go more than 365 days. So the way I'm reading this is a 30-day streak challenge would be passable, or a 45, but not that 366.
Wow. They are putting the kibosh on trackable benchmarking, waymarking logs, or specifically lab cache finds. That's interesting.
Right, because one of the things that they had said is lab caches are temporary only at mega events usually, so they don't want those to qualify because they are not permanent caches.
Right, and they're still working on that one too with lab caches, so it's, you know, who knows what they're eventually going to end up, if they come up with their own icon or whatever for that as well.
Right. And then also listing elements like cache titles, owner names, GC codes, or the text in the listing is not provided or not allowed anymore.
And how many chances?
Well, you can't do anything of, you know, find 50 by this cache hider.
Right.
That's now out the window. You can't do the ABC challenges where you have to find a cache starting with
each letter.
The first letter of each. Yeah. So that I was a little surprised to see.
Yeah, me too, because there's so many out there based on that.
Sure, but I think they just decided it's too tough for people to figure that stuff out. And, you know, that's kind of sad that they're, I don't want to say dumbing it down, but they're dumbing it down the challenge caches to that level.
Yeah.
I understand why they're doing that. It'd just be nice if they didn't.
Yeah, because... like you said, the ones that have been grandfathered, again, I still don't know how they're going to shuffle that pile. They're taking away percentages.
Yep. So, well, but not necessarily in, like, you have to have found so many percent of your fines need to be this type of cash.
Right.
They haven't said that explicitly, though I think that's implied. What they're saying is you can't say you have to have found 80% of the Earth caches in France. That's their example.
Right.
So that does not work. But I'm wondering if you could say, and I don't think so, but I wonder if you could say, you know, 50% of your fines must be traditional, 50% or more, or something like that. If that's, I don't think that you can do that from this, but they don't make that very, you know, because it says all or percent percentage of caches.
Yeah.
So I'm not taking that to mean the fines. I'm taking that to mean caches. And they say a discrete number in a specific area. For instance, if you said 50 Earth caches in France, that would be publishable, but the 80% of Earth caches would not.
Right. Yeah, so they're looking for specific numbers then, not a
right.
A
general. Well, and the reason is that things move.
Yes,
you know, it changes. Times Scott said that he was working on something, and then you know a new cache would publish and throw everything off for him.
Yeah, exactly, exactly. Wow, lots of stuff.
Now, another thing that's changed, kind of getting off of that stuff, they're now recommending the difficulty rating of a challenge cache be based on the difficulty of the challenge, the terrain. Is the rating on the actual cache location. So the difficulty is the completing of the requirements, and the terrain is actually getting
finding
to the cache.
It. Yeah.
Right. So there's nothing to say that this is, you know, a really challenging find at the end anymore. It's just the terrain. And I'm happy to see that change just because I think the difficulty of the challenge is probably more important.
I would say. Lots of stuff, lot to take in, and like Daryl had said earlier, this is kind of the line in the sand after the this period of a year gone by, and they did state it's, you know, this is something that they're going to look at to for the next year to see what's going on, and I cannot believe that there won't be other changes.
Well, they've pretty much said that there are still going to be changes.
Yeah.
They haven't come out and explicitly said that, but they've said this is what it's going to be for about a year or so as they review things.
Yeah.
So expect more changes.
Oh, yeah. And hold on to your cookies, and we'll see what happens. Because some of this stuff may get reversed, may not. Right. Who knows?
Well, and I think something that's really important that you might lose sight of as you see what they're doing to this, the folks at geocaching.com who are working on these changes – really want challenge caches to stay.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking for a way to keep challenge caches viable.
Yeah.
They're not looking to shut it down. They want to keep them. So they're trying to find that happy median and make it work.
Yep.
So let's, you know, we want to work with them and try to find what works and what doesn't. And I'm sure we're going to see some surveys in about 2 or 3 months, maybe a little longer, but you know, giving people a chance to give their feedback of what's working and what isn't and what they still want to see.
And I would think it would be a helpful suggestion instead of, well, this sucks, give explanation, give your thought process into as to why you agree or disagree with something to give them some extra stuff to work with to make the final conclusions.
Yeah, and let them know what, you know, when they are asking about that or when you're communicating with, when you have a problem. Let them know what your problem is, not, you know, exactly this is my, you know, don't tell them, you know, hey, I have a problem with X cache. I want it to be this. Tell them I have this issue with this cache. This would fix it, but here's why I'm having this problem.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's what they're looking for, because they might, you know, they might be able to figure out something else that works better based on what those problems are than if you just say, you know, hey, I really want, you know, owner names to be factored in again.
Yeah. I think this is exciting. I think this is something that's going to be good down the road. You may actually see a increase in quality challenge caches. And in my book, that's always good.
Well, here's my thing. We're going to see a very narrow band of caches being allowed now.
Yeah.
A lot, you know, I'd say less than 20% of the caches that I've seen published are going to still be viable under the new guidelines. And this is one, you know, Scott really needs to have been here for this because he's the challenge casher amongst us all.
Yes.
But it's really going to limit what you can do. And at least for the first couple of months, people are going to have to kind of butt up against the new guidelines, test out where things sit. The reviewers are still going to have to figure that out. Then about 4 or 5 months from now, we'll probably start seeing some very creative challenge caches.
Yeah.
Based on these new rules, stuff that maybe we didn't even see before.
I agree.
But it's all about testing those limits and seeing what can and can't be done and finding the new and exciting challenge caches within.
Yeah, and I'm looking forward to that. Like you said, you know, some of the old might be going out, but the new possibilities, you know, that's limited by us. So go out there and give it a whirl.
And as a finder, this is pretty much all good news because now with that challenge checker, there's no ambiguity.
Yeah.
If that challenge checker says, yes, you found it, and you're good to go.
Yeah, that'll be great. All right. Good stuff. Well, Daryl, thank you again so much for stopping on by. And it is so nice when you are here, and I can't wait to get you and Scott on the same show at the same time because that's all he's been talking about.
Yeah, we'll have to do one on like Periscope or something because I know he's anxious to talk about Periscope and that tech.
Oh, I know it. I know it. It's good stuff. All right. Well, you know, that and all the times that he's, you know, on your show. So that's, you know, another thing altogether.
Sure. Yeah. and we talked about Periscope on my show.
Yeah. Yeah. It's good stuff. All right. Good stuff. I think it is time. Let me get my notes here going so that I... You know, that's one of the things, again, with the new computers. It's like I've got new mice all over the place. I've got different places on the board that I got them double checked. It's the slider on the right, not the slider on the left. You know, that kind of fun stuff makes it interesting. But we'll get there. All right. Good stuff. Again, Daryl, thanks so much for being on. I think it is time to close this one out. Here we go. Thank you for subscribing to the Geocaching Podcast. Please be sure to join us each and every Wednesday at 9:30 p.m. Eastern Time for another episode of the Geocaching Podcast right here on the Geocaching Podcast website at www.geocachingpodcast.com/live. The video version of our show is available on YouTube, and the audio version is available on our home website, iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and many of your favorite podcatchers. We love hearing from our viewers and listeners, so please visit us through our social media sites or contact us via our voicemail line at 630-31-VOICE. The Geocaching Podcast is a Head Heart Hat production and is produced by Andy Smith, Scott Burks, Corey Stevens, and Chad Courtney. This show is copyright 2016 by Andrew T. Smith. All rights reserved.